Right now, it is time to bring in the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack, Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys. Their company is Treasure Quest Appraisal Group. You can find them on the web, tqag.com, and you can find them right here on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
It seems like an eternity since I've spoken.
But it's been a little while, and I mean, not much has happened. We've had hurricanes, and stuff. First of all, how did you guys? I know you weren't in the direct path or anything, but still, it was a pretty wide storm. You guys make out okay at your house?
Yeah, we were very on this in our area here. We were very fortunate. We really. Just had some wind, and we had a lot of rain and some local flooding, and vegetation. But, you know, it's not even worth mentioning considering what our neighbors across the state have to deal with. So,
well, you know, I realized this weekend I was sitting around, and the amount of people I know who live in Florida is amazing. I went through the list. There's 10 or 11 of my broadcasting people that I've known over the years that have retired there. NASCAR Dave from our station has retired there. It seems like that's the destination for people that know Marshall Miles. And I checked in on everybody, and everybody it was in various places worked out all right. So that's good to know. Now, on to the news of auctions. I love this title. Ordinary Chinese vase valued at £2,000 sells for almost £8 million. Is that true?
It's another record.
That's a pretty wide margin there. You know, the sale was in Paris. 30 Chinese bidders, and I say Chinese because they're mainly Chinese bidders, just kept bidding and bidding and bidding and bidding and bidding. And that's why they were surprised about it.
Well, you know, we've touched on this in the past about repatriation, I think would be the proper term, of a lot of the Asian works of art over the past 20 years. At first, it seemed like they were just kind of under the radar, and as records were being broken for these Chinese works of art over the years, they've become much more newsworthy, for lack of a better word. And but we've known for a number of years that a lot of these Asian, Asian carpets, Asian porcelains, Asian jades, they have just skyrocketed. And a lot of them, the majority of them, I would say, and we don't know all of them, but the majority, I'm thinking, are purchased by wealthy Chinese business people. And even Chinese consortiums, I'm certain, have bought a lot of these to get them back into China.
Well, it's, once again, I see some of the prices, and I see, the differences, and it's a good thing if it's going back to where it belongs. I joke a lot about the money that you see in auctions, and we'll get around to comic books a little bit later on this morning. But now maybe you guys can explain this. Henry Moore's reclining figure, which this headline says was once called a monstrosity, could catch, I guess, up to $40 million at Sotheby's.
Wow. That I think that is actually going to be a major record for Henry Moore. I don't know what his auction record is, but it's certainly worth researching because he's kind. I like his stuff. We when we lived in New York, there's a beautiful Henry Moore sculpture that is in Central Park, and it just kind of sits there and people look at it, but it's really kind of part of the landscape there now. When is that auction? When is it supposed to be sold?
Let me look at this here. Can't find it yet.
I expect it to break records. Here
yeah,
it is.
I don't, 30 to 40. Yeah, but you know what? What I can't understand why people would call it a monstrosity. One thing, I'm not a huge art person. I know, but I know what I like when I see something. I love the rounded, curved forms in things that
right.
he does. I mean, it's just smooth, flowing, and it can fit. I think it's the type of art that can fit in either a modern house, a classical house, an old New England house. I just think it fits universally just about anywhere.
Yeah, I think his stuff is really beautiful and it's very tactile because it's so smooth and I'm a very tactile person when it comes to sculptures. You can ask a couple of the curators at museums that have asked me to leave. The sculpture in Central Park, people gather around it in Sheep's Meadow to lay out in the sun. I mean, it's huge, and I think monstrosity is a very unfair term for any of his work. I mean,
yeah.
I just don't see it at all.
I think that people think that because it's semi-abstract and it's not everybody's taste. I love it. I think that it's really great. I do agree with you, Marshall. It's those rounded curves, and it's not the very sharp abstract. It's just it is more rounded, and it's you can see what's the figure. You know, you can see what was going on, and it's just I think it's everyone's has their taste, and that's fine. But I think that his works also are. Sought after, and I think that this probably being one of his pieces that are going to be very desirable. I think that Sotheby's is just lining it up for a really good for a good sale, marketing it. We're talking about it. Here it is. I've seen several and various sizes, and that's the thing is that it's deceptive. It's as far as the how big the piece is, because he does have some smaller pieces too that are in the $1 million, million to $2 million range. So it'll be interesting to see where this one actually ends up selling.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a date, I just can't find a date when the auction is.
It also says that this is the highest estimate ever placed on a work by Moore. So interesting. That they just feel that this is it goes good, better, best. So this must be one of the best of his works, and that's why the estimate is placed there.
Yeah. When I heard monstrosity, I was figuring something. but it's not.
Well,
there.
How many times? I'm sure you've heard this about Alexander Calder, the huge red Calder that's in Chicago in one of the squares. That term has been used for so many artists in sculptures over the year for their work, but it's only from people who don't really seem to understand what the artist's body of work, what their evolution as an artist. So take Henry Moore, if you look at a lot of his things, even though some of them are angular, they're soft angles, they're not really jagged. There's something very friendly and warm about his work, and Alexander Calder, on the other hand, very angular but still extremely compelling to look at and just to touch and to see. So that's a horrible word to use for artists, monstrosity. That is so uninformed. It just is so uninformed.
Also, here's some other context, because it I did find here, Marshall, it's being sold the 14th of November, but this particular it says Sotheby's is selling the only one of an edition of seven that was kept by the Moore family, that it traveled the world when it was lent to a major British council exhibition in the 1950s. It was sold in the 1970s, and it is the first time this cast has appeared at auction. So there's a lot of factors there, and that would justify why the estimate is where it is because of the provenance and the background of the piece.
Here's another little factoid that people don't consider when they see these sculptures and like in the prices and everything. A lot of these, we had a client in Palm Beach, may she rest in peace. She actually became a very good friend of ours, and she had her own sculpture garden. She moved it wherever she did, and I know for a fact she moved it twice while we knew her. And these are not just little sculptures. These are huge, huge things. And having to move these sculptures is in itself a major feat, because it's not, a lot of them cannot be broken down into small pieces and put back together. You have to move the entire sculpture. So that's another consideration when you're seeing these things, and they and the word monstrosity comes up. Well, no, these things, when they're installed properly and in the right place, are absolutely magnificent. So for someone to buy a large sculpture like this, you have to have the wherewithal to do a proper installation, and if that means spending a couple million dollars to put it in the right surroundings, then that's what these people do. So, and these things are not things that go into warehouses to be hidden. These large sculptures by Henry Moore and Alexander Cole, these are all meant to be seen, and the large ones we've all seen, because they become world renowned. So it's not just the cost of the sculpture, it's also the cost of the proper installation and maintenance of something like this. So it's really, you really have to love art, and you really need to appreciate it in order to be able to purchase these things and put them where they're supposed to go.
All right, let's go on. Oh, go on, Tim.
Nope, that's okay.
Let's go on to comic books, graphic novels. there's a story saying how hot the market has gotten, and I thought I'd take a look at it. The Rocket copy of Action Comics number one. Now, this is number one is when Superman was introduced to the world. Okay, it was changed hands for $3.4 million in a private deal. $3.4 million. Now, just 30 days before that, $3.2 million was sold after Dallas's Heritage 2 auctions. These are big prices for comic books. I mean, you're coming into a time where you see these prices, and it's not just one or two; it's a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we have Heritage to thank for that, because they have become, it seems to me, the preeminent market for the sale and records of comic books and what did you call them? Graphic
novels. That's the modern term for comic books. Graphic novels.
Well, they have a big, they have continual sales, but they're doing a big sale right now as well. And they have, and some things that are coming up. There's almost every day there's comic books or collectible things. They've really stepped up over the past, I think, 5 years, and really made their mark for what. Look at all of the comic books that have sold for records. Most of them have sold at Heritage.
What? Right. Well, the big thing is too is that you have to look at it's not just Heritage. It's the whole market itself. Is that the grading process back in the 90s, the 80s, the 90s, when comic books used to be sold, there would be a group of people who would get together. You'd have to bring them in. They'd have to go over the grading, and it wasn't encapsulated at all. Now you have this whole process where that book is encapsulated, and you know that it just adds to the longevity, the life of the graphic novel, because it's just inherent, the type of paper that it's printed on. If you've ever held a comic book, you know that it's not the highest quality of paper.
No.
And it's not going to last for an eternity. So there's a lot of preservation that has gone into the whole collecting area. There's a lot of people that have just gotten into it and just love it. And then you also have to look at what's going on in pop culture, like what's going on in the society. So you have this very popular television show, The Big Bang Theory, with these guys that they all collect comic books too. So, and it's all, you know, it centers around, there are episodes in the comic book store. So all of these things add to the collectible nature of these, because they also talked about some of these early books, and they talked about the values and things, which is interesting, and that gets people then looking and saying, hey, you know, let's see what's in this market. And the numbers have just grown astronomically. I mean, they're behind the sports cards. I mean, we were talking a while ago just about the trading cards and everything, and how that has just really, really skyrocketed. But comic books have held their own, and they are, you know, coming up, and they're a close second with all these pop culture items that have been coming up for auction.
And the interesting thing is, if you think about trading cards, the valuable ones, and think about comic books, the valuable ones, who were they purchased for originally?
Right.
They were purchased for kids.
Yes,
how in God's name, how something purchased for a kid can stand the test of time to be in such good condition that it draws this kind of money. It really is amazing when you think about it. It's not like these things back then when they were created, nobody had a thought in mind that trading cards and that comic books would one day become a collector's item. I mean, that was not even on the table.
Right. Right. Well, and now also the other thing that goes along with that is the original black and white drawings that were used for comic books also are surging. There was Heritage just sold a 1984. It was a Spider-Man comic, setting a new auction record for an interior comic panel. $3.4 million, and this is, you know, these are the original artwork. So it's there's a lot going on in the world of comics.
Yeah, do you remember, Tim, when we first got started and we had some collections of original comic art that we were trying to sell, and back then it was virtually impossible to get any good prices for that. But over the years, I mean, it's just skyrocketed. And now original art for certain things is just untouchable. It really is.
It's going crazy. Well, just this year alone, in April, Fantastic Four, number one, from 1961, that sold for $1.5 million. Also in June, All-Star Comics number 8 sold for $1.6 million. And then in May of 2022, there's a Detective Comics number 27 sold for $1.74 million. So you can see that there's a lot, a lot going on.
Now I'm going to ask
over the $1 million mark.
I'm going to ask a question: is over the past 20 years, the success of Marvel Comics going from comics to movies, did that have any help in moving the needle?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. It all started with, I believe, with Star Wars. All of the merchandise and all of the hype for that, and then with comic books, it's the same. Excuse me, graphic
with all
novels.
The Marvel movies.
The Marvel, the interest in the comic characters. And once they did the first movie, I don't know what their thought process was, but I always wondered if they thought that this would be as big a hit at the Marvel movies as they have become, because there are cartoon characters in these Marvel movies. I'm not much of a comic kind of guy. That I've never heard of, but I'm sure you've heard of them all, Marshall. And then they've turned them all into comics. They've turned them into, added them to their franchises. And I don't see any time in the near future that the Marvel franchise is going to diminish. I mean, they're just going to, I think they're going to just keep.
This year, Captain America comics, number one. That sold for $3.1 million for that comic book. And, you know, we've seen that. And then also,
I think that was also at Heritage.
That was. And then in September of 2021, Spider-Man, Amazing Fantasy, number 15, is the first appearance of Spider-Man. That sold for $3.6 million. And we see the franchise of Marvel going with all of these different characters. And that, I do believe that. That also is going to help with the longevity of the collecting category, because you have these movies out there, you have younger generation looking, seeing these and knowing who these characters are, because that's the biggest thing. I mean, with comics, they date back to, you know, old political cartoons and old comic characters from the turn of the century. But, you know, who remembers Andy Cap or some of these other characters that they didn't have movies made after them or action figures or anything else? So that their collectability, they may be very interesting, artistic done by the artist, but there's not this big draw where you have all of this with these modern movies really grandizing these characters. And then also then it's an opportunity for people to add them to their collection. And it just helps Comic-Con grow. And there's more people that can go and meet the characters, see them, what comics are available, what can I get? And that just drives the prices.
You know, I just look back and there's a few things that you see in. I've always been a comic book fan. I was not your Superman type of guy. I was the Fantastic Four. I was totally not DC Comics. I sit here and I think it's amazing how different aspects of these things develop. And unlike baseball cards and stuff like that, comics really do have. I'm surprised they're not more valuable than baseball cards, to be honest with you, just simply for the connection and the reading factor. But it's all part of your business is absolutely crazy with people talk about being comprehensive and covering things. There are more things that can be collectible and that become collectible are amazing. You're in a business that's never going to die.
Right.
I was not a major comic book fanatic, but there were certain ones that I didn't like the characters like Superman and all that. I liked things like do you remember O. Henry?
Oh yeah.
Or Little Henry, I think, yeah, Little. And also, like, those sort of characters, like Dondi and Blondie, Nancy. I liked the Casper. I used to have Casper comic books. I mean, that was kind of my ilk. And then I have to say, the one thing that I will never forget is the smell of a comic book. Even not being a fanatic about comics like you are, I can. There's something about the smell of a comic book that just never goes away.
No, you're right. Sometimes it's that damp smell.
The smell of the paper and the ink together in a comic book is different than the smell of a newspaper. You can smell a comic book a mile away. And that was kind of my comic book experience. I never got into all of the Marvel things, so.
All right. Well, all right. So now I guess we can look at one final thing here, and then that is the popularity of gas and oil advertising signs.
Yes.
I was watching, I forgot, the Pickers or something like that, and it's amazing, even though some of them are not big money, anybody can get in on this. And it seems like we have a person that's transferring an old garage, and it's going to become a display for like a 1940s garage. It just looks like something that it's growing. That's a growing market as well.
Yes. Well, you know what? It's always been around. There was a time that it was in the early 90s. And up to the end of the 90s, that the prices were starting to escalate. And then there seemed to be like a slowdown. And I think of a lot of it is because of the popularity in the early 90s. People were, they were getting, they were being, what's the word I'm looking for here? They were being repainted. They were being restored. And, you know, they, in the beginning, they were original paint. And now most of them have all been restored. And not unlike a push car, a pedal car that's been restored, the market now, even for pedal cars, are increasing, even though they're restored. So I think there's the trend has changed over the years from original to what looks like a pristine original, but it's just totally restored, and people are paying a lot of money for them, and they're becoming very popular. You see them a lot in restaurants as themes. So I mean, they're out there for people to get, and they are really. We've sold some collections, and we've appraised a number of collections, and we've seen some really cool things that you don't normally, you know, just like an empty gas can. You know, everybody thinks about the gas pump, but things like the gas cans and the oil cans, the glass oil cans with a funnel on the top of them, people collect all of that kind of auto memorabilia. So there's a trend, an upward trend, definitely.
There definitely is. And actually, at the end of August or early September, there was a double-sided porcelain gasoline sign. It's Musco, M-U-S-G-O, Musco gasoline. And because it's pristine, that also helped drive the price. It sold for $1.5 million. The other reason that this sold for so much is because this is the only one known in this condition. It was for a little gas station that was in Michigan, and to have both sides of the sign in pristine condition is great, because what they were saying is that these signs, this gas station only, I think it was in existence for almost 6 months too. So it wasn't in existence for very long. And what they would do is actually use this sign, or the signs were used over septic tanks. So the septic fumes would decay one side of the sign. So if you do find them, it's usually just the one side is in pristine condition. But having both of them in excellent condition, and finding it just in such pristine condition helped set a record at 1.5 million for this advertising sign.
Well, you know, the other thing about the signs is because they were metal with porcelain on the outside, they were used a lot of time for target practice. So, you know, you see bullet holes or you see the porcelain cracked off in places. So when you would find originally when they started to be collectible, that's what everybody was looking for, was the pristine version of like a Texaco sign or a Gulf sign or some of the other shell without that. But now, you know, if you can find them with it, it kind of lends more credence to the fact that it's an original sign rather than a reproduction, because the reproductions are so plentiful out there for the signs. But like the globes and things, those haven't been reproduced as much. So getting one of those that has been in original condition, or maybe it's been the name, which is usually embossed in the glass cover, a lot of times they will repaint the color of the you know, the name of the gas. But fortunately, this is one of the areas of collecting where a restored piece is preferable to one that is not restored. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think another reason the market is kind of hot right now, because they are fun. They're cool. They're great conversation pieces. And they're pretty much readily available now with the internet, so you can get them shipped anywhere.
Well, guess what, guys? I have to pay you double time. I got you for a half hour this morning. Sorry about that. I'll let you get back to your lives.
No worries. And we are going to be in Europe for the next 2 weeks, so we're going to be in Italy.
All right, and it's going to make it hard to do the shows.
Yeah, I believe so.
All right. Well, then I'll speak to you guys in 3 weeks. What I'll do is I'll split this one in half and I'll play the two shows. Okay.
There we go.
All right, guys. Well, have us
on the 25th.
All right. Have a safe trip, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Talk to you when we get back.
Bye-bye.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Tim, Luke, and Greg Straub, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on Robin Hood Radio.